Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And today I have a special interview, and the subject is short stories. And I'm so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper Ambassador Michael Oren, who has written a brilliant book of short stories, and I wanted him to come back so we could discuss the subject. I know he loves writing short stories, and his collection is called The Night Archer and Other Stories. It is an amazing collection. I'm so happy to welcome you back, Ambassador.
I am absolutely delighted to be with you again.
Well, thank you for joining me. This has been, November is in America, a national novel writing month. And of course, a lot of people started writing, and they were asking me early back in October and earlier for recommendations of books they should read. And I said that one of the best ways is to start with short stories. And The Night Archer is one of the best collections I have ever read. So I am so happy that
wonderful.
We can talk about it. Of course, my listeners already know I've been talking about you a lot, that you are the former Israeli ambassador to the United States. And it's funny that, you know, when you were an ambassador, even while you were an ambassador, you were busy writing short stories.
I was indeed. It was a state secret at the time, but yes, I was. I try to write every single day, getting up as early as possible. You know, I say to people who are aspiring writers, if you can write 10 minutes a day, do it.
Exactly.
It's a great discipline.
Yeah, it is a discipline and a craft. So tell us your history of starting short story writing pretty early on in your life.
Oh, I started as a teenager. I started with poetry, and I published my first poem in 17 magazine when I was 14 years old. That was my achievement. And I went to write short stories. And I love the form of short story. It's like the haiku of fiction. A short story writer has to do in 3 pages what a novelist does in 300 pages, developing characters, plot lines, dialogue, all tremendous, tremendous discipline. And I enjoy it very, very much. I wish there were a wider audience. There are very few publications today that publish short stories. Once upon a time, there were dozens and dozens. Today, there may be a dozen altogether. And I hope the genre comes back because I think it's a classic form.
And it is wonderful to read short stories, you know, people who are traveling, people who are going from here to there. I think having a short story and just stopping for a few minutes of relaxation to read a short story, perhaps while you have lunch, preferably outside under the trees. You know, we have these devices we can carry with us, and a short story is really an ideal thing to read.
And my short stories are sometimes very, very short, as short as a page. The Night Archer has 51 short stories in them, and it's not a particularly long book, so very, very short stories, and certainly something you can read before going to bed or, you know, while you're having your breakfast cereal. And each one is a contained story in and of itself. I set out to write 51 completely different stories. So you have ghost stories and history stories and mystery and murder stories and, of course, love stories. And many short stories writers, the collections will be around a central theme. I'm a huge Elizabeth Strout fan. I just read her most recent book. And, you know, most of her stories take place in sort of a small town, Maine. Or if you're Tim and Brian, it's going to take place in Vietnam. I didn't want to be limited by any place, any time. And to me, short story writing is also the ultimate form of freedom because I could be anywhere, anyone, at any time in history that I want to be. And that's amazing. It's the ultimate escape for oneself.
And the stories range there. Some are touching, some are a little strange. And all of them, you paint these wonderful pictures. I got such a kick out of so many of them. You know, when I was reading them, sometimes I was just laughing. They're so... So really unusual and not expected, and I loved it. And I thought, wow, this is a great, you know, this is a great way to put in all the things that you learn in life, all the things that you see in life, and put down on paper. I particularly enjoyed, one of my favorite was The Good Table. I love that. I thought, oh, this is such a, this is so good. Tell us a little bit about that.
I'll tell you about it. In all my short stories, I'm trying to do three things. One, I'm trying to tell a story that's going to be entertaining for my reader. Secondly, I want to draw on my experiences. So The Good Table draws on my experience as an ambassador in Washington. It's about a social climbing couple. And people like that, believe it or not, really exist. Their whole life is getting to good tables in Washington. And the expression is, to get good table, you have to give good table. And they're trying to figure out which tables they can get to. Ultimately, they want to get to the White House. That's the ultimate table. And it's about the social climbing. So it's drawing on experience. But there are different experiences. I was, a soldier, so I have a war story. A father, a grandfather, family stories. Academia, I spent time in, teaching at university. So it'll draw on these experiences. The third part of the story, though, is the most important, and that is, I want to say in each story something about us. I want to say something about the human condition. I want to say something about love, about relationships, about reality. And in that story, for example, the question of what is reality? Because here you have these socialites who really are making their own reality, but creating a reality which people in Washington actually believe. Everyone seems to believe that this couple actually has influence, when in fact they have none.
Well, it's so clever, and I think people should read it. And I think forevermore, when they think about Washington, now having experienced it on a small scale myself, I thought this is so real.
It's actually real. It's based on a real couple. And these socialites in Washington will hire advisors, consultants, about how to get good table. And this couple does. They acquire these consultants. It's real.
And you write it just perfectly. And it's just right. It's spot on. I can tell you.
Thank you.
I love it. I love it. There are so many that are just great, and it's. I love the eighth day. Day eight. People never think of day eight. You know, we got the 7 days, and then we sort of stop it. We don't think what. Well, there was a day eight. What was going on?
Well, one of my themes for me is I'm a person of spirituality and belief, and I write a lot about God, and I write about God's relationship with humanity. And that story is the question about how God came around to giving, endowing human beings with souls. And what's interesting about the story is that the author of the idea is not God, but Satan. And how Satan convinces God to give human beings souls, and why. And it's a story that grew out of my own faith and thinking about it. Relationship between God and people and good and evil.
Well, what I love about your stories, as you said, you were a soldier, so you've been to combat. One of the things that happens here, and I think some of it is this horrible. I don't know. They got into this thing on television, sort of putting down a lot of things, but one of the things is so. Common in sort of those comedy shows is that men shouldn't read, men don't need to read books, men shouldn't be poets, men shouldn't want to write. And it's so strange to me because, I mean, throughout history, so many men have been just great poets, and this love for words that they've sort of made it a joke that it's not a manly thing to do is very bad for men, I think, because there's a lot of release that you could have in your writing.
It's so true. It's so true. And I also wanted to be, I wasn't an English major in college. Actually, I was a major in Middle Eastern history. And I wanted to fashion my own life after someone like, Hemingway, or my favorite writer, American writer, is Ambrose Bierce. If you've ever read him, I strongly recommend you read him. He was a veteran of the Battle of Shiloh and the Civil War, a man of action. He actually disappeared in the Mexican desert in 1913 looking for Pancho Villa. They never found his body. And I liked that. He's a wonderful short story writer. And his short stories written in the 1880s, they read like they were written this morning. They're postmodern. But I like that kind of life. And what can I say? It sounds very politically incorrect, but it was a very manly life. These were people who went out, and yes, they fought in wars, and yes, they were adventurers, and yes, they were writers, and did not feel there was anything unmanly about sitting down and writing a short story.
Exactly, because it's wonderful, I think, to be able to put it down on paper is sometimes so, it can relieve you of a lot of tension and a lot of the angst that you might normally have. And one of the things, since I started this radio program, I have been encouraging people to write. I always, you know, start the program, this is a program for those who dream of writing. And I have been, because of my work with the military, I have been encouraging people, veterans particularly, at here in St. Petersburg at our local hospitals and groups, that write a book. And it doesn't mean you have to write a book about what you went through, because that might not be what you need to do. Write a cookbook, write a book of poetry, write a book of children's book for your grandchildren. But put something down on paper and learn that discipline. I think it calms you down when you know that you're going to sit down and write.
It's also very redeeming. One of the early stories in the Night Archer is a story about a father who has an autistic child. And he's trying to figure out how to relate to this autistic child who's in the park, in the playground, playing. It's called a story called D. And I had dyslexia, severe dyslexia as a kid. I have severe dyslexia as an adult. It doesn't go away. And so I know it is to grow up with learning disabilities, but I also had children who had learning disabilities. And so in this story, I'm working out my relationship with my children as a father. I'm also working out a relationship with myself. And it's a tough story, not an easy story, because dealing with learning disabilities is not easy all the time.
And it is a tough story, but again, putting it down on paper and sharing it with people, that they can then look at it from their point of view, if they've dealt with it, or if they have some other problem in their lives, to realize that putting it down in paper really helps.
It helps tremendously. It's therapeutic. It's redemptive. It's meditative. It's all of the above. And to me, it's just an inestimable blessing.
Well, you know, really, everybody should be people of the book. People who put down and save their memories, share their memories, and you never know what your words, the words that come to your heart when you put them on paper, what they will. The impact they will have on the reader.
Indeed. And every once in a while, someone will come up to me and say, thank you for writing this. You don't know how that spoke to me. You don't know. And I, especially, you know, for writers who are struggling and, you know, maybe not making the New York Times bestseller list, maybe it's better to reach that one person and transform their lives than it is to reach 100,000 readers and not transform their lives.
Exactly. And the thing is, even for people who, you know, might not want to publish publicly, if they write a book and they share it with their families, this can be something, a treasure that the family will keep forever.
Indeed. And I'm aware of that all the time, that I'm writing for future generations and my own family.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the stories, let's talk about Live in Fame and Dive in Flames. What I like about your stories, so many of the stories, that at the same time, as you said, you're writing at different times in history, and so people can learn a lot about history simply from these stories.
So the Live in Flames is a triptych. I have several stories that are three stories put into one. And this triptych takes place at the height of World War II, and it deals with an obsession I've had as a historian, and that is that during World War II, America and the Allies invested hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in air power and bombers, B-17s, B-29s, and they killed hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people with these bombers, but they actually didn't have any impact on the outcome of the war. And yet the technology existed in the 1940s not to invest in bombers, but to invest in guided missiles. There was television back then. There were missiles back then. The Germans invented the missiles. And you could have shortened that whole war and saved countless lives just by investing in a missile that could have taken out Adolf Hitler. So that's pretty much what this story is about. It's about an inventor in Kansas whose own son is preparing to go into the war as an airman, as a bomber. And the average lifespan of a bomber was about 3 weeks. And so this inventor is working against the clock, but he's also obsessed with developing a guided missile. And he's trying to show this missile to the military and convince them to stop making these bombers and to invest in missiles. You know, keep in mind, America invented the atom bomb in 3 years. When you put your mind to it, you can invent some pretty extraordinary things. And you go from that story to the story of an actual a waste gunner on a B-17 and his life. And then you go from that story to a story of a young Frenchman on the Normandy coast who is a mussel fisherman who is in love with a girl in the village. And how these three stories come together is the plot of Live in Flames, Die in Flames. It's taken from the second line. The title is taken from the second line of the Air Force anthem, you know, off we go into the wild blue yonder. So if you look at the second stanza, that line is in there.
Oh, well, I enjoyed that story. I really did for many reasons. It was funny. Sometimes these things happen when for years I hadn't heard the name Grumman. And then last week I had a guest on, a pilot who flew a Grumman across the United States and back at the age of 71. He wanted to prove that he could do it. And so suddenly the name Grumman keeps coming up, and I was reminded. I had almost forgotten that my husband met Mr. Grumman one time. I love when things like that happen, where there's, you know, just within a week, I get all these connections, and I love that. You know, life is, as you said, you know, a lot of the stories do have a Jewish theme to them. This yearning for some understanding of what it's all about, right?
Well, for example, when I was in government, I did a state visit to Lithuania, and I was the deputy to the prime minister in charge of diplomacy. So I was sent to Lithuania, and my maternal grandmother was from a small village in Lithuania, and they were very excited to hear about this. But everyone in this village in 1941 was taken out and shot. My grandmother, of course, got out before this, but there were no survivors from this village. And so the foreign minister of Lithuania offered to take me there, and he took me there. And I went to this village, and the main street is called Synagogue Street. There are two synagogues. One is a bakery, and one is a pigsty today. And I came out of this village, and I said, okay, how do I somehow deal? How do I process this experience? And it took me a while, but the result was another triptych. It was a story made up of three different chapters in the life of a family from this village. And the story is called Anisht, which is the name of this village in Yiddish. And it goes to three generations, through a Talmudic scholar, through a survivor of the Holocaust, to a corrupt politician in Israel. So I'm drawing on my historical knowledge, but also my political knowledge here as a politician, and comes together in this triptych called Anisht, which comes from a very deep place. The story of that village, a visit to my grandmother's village in Lithuania.
Well, it is. It's a great story. And another connection. my husband's father came from Lithuania. So So over the years, of course, we've always taken interest in what happened there. Luckily, he did get to Israel. He was a young pioneer. So my husband was a Sabra. So, you know, so we have that connection, too. And the Grumman. It's funny. My husband was a student of Moshe Aaron. So
who I knew quite well. Great and revered. He was great, an extraordinary man.
Oh, he was absolutely amazing. And I often think of him, you know, during these very troubling times. And I think the great thing about reading these short stories is we do, in a way, the world is at this moment is so overwhelming that to take this break and to read some short stories and to know that sort of life's challenges people have faced before, and that's what short stories do. In a few pages, you can really bring to life some very important subjects.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, I'm finishing up my next collection of short stories, which I hope to publish next year. And again, I'm dealing with some of the same themes. An interesting theme in the next collection of short stories is the Bible again. And I've decided to give voice to people in the Bible who don't really get a voice. So I've told the story of David and Goliath from the perspective of Goliath. I've told the story of Bathsheba and David from Bathsheba. And I've told the story of Exodus from the perspective of Pharaoh. Pharaoh tells the story of Exodus. And that has been a tremendous fun, but also very deeply meaning. It's not just a story. Pharaoh is dealing with the question, okay, who has free will? Does anybody have free will? Because Pharaoh in the Exodus story doesn't have free will. God hardens his heart. And why does Pharaoh have to pay the price for that? So these are deep questions, and these short stories enable me again to be anywhere, anybody, anything I want to be. As you know, there's one story in the Night Archer where it's told from the perspective of a tiger in the jungle, who has just attacked a human being. Right? You can be anything. It's great.
And you can have
so much fun.
Exactly, so much fun. And I hope that people will listen to me and listen to you and read your stories, because it is so important nowadays. That one of the things, of course, I'm so worried about young people not reading enough. And I think sometimes a short story might be just what they need to start with. And indeed, when we were young, we read short stories. I mean, that's how we started. And so I'm hoping that we can get through to more people. Of course, one of the things I want just to mention, that to be a good writer, you also have to read. So you read a lot when you were young, yes?
And I still read. And I used to be much more methodical about it. I used to set out my reading for like a year and a half. When I was in the Army, I decided to read all the Russian masters. So, you know, you wear a gun belt. And in my rear pouch of my gun belt, I always had a Tolstoy, I had a Chekhov, I had a Dostoevsky. While everyone else is cleaning their guns, I got a chance to read some great short stories by Tolstoy. He was a great short story writer. And so you learn the craft. It's Mark Twain saying that it's 10% inspiration and 90% perspiration. He's not wrong. So much of it is craft. But also, for my advice to young readers, to young writers, is not just to read, but be prepared. Prepare to, it's a rough field. You get rejected. You get rejected sometimes quite brutally. And to this day, I still get rejected here and there. It comes with the turf. It does.
But it's a learning experience. So you just keep plodding along and learn that discipline, learn that craft. There are things that you can do to get better. But the most important thing is to get it on the paper in the first place.
Sure, and then that's a process, because then you get it, you send it to an editor, you send it to friends who read and give back comments, and sometimes the comments are tough. But just remember, life is short stories. Our life is composed of short stories. They're the pixels of our lives. It's how many times do you come home and say, you're not going to believe what happened to me today? That's a short story.
Exactly.
A friendship as a child. That's a short story. It's one of the things I love about the Bible. The Bible is a collection of short stories.
Well, you know, I am so thrilled that you joined me again today. I look forward to the release of the next book, and you have to make sure you tell me so that you're here on Pub Day. Pub Day is always so exciting for an author, and that's what I love to do. I love to help authors promote their books, and I'm trying to get out there more and more now that the pandemic's over, as I used to do, go to a lot of events so I can talk to people about books and about reading and the fun and the joy of it. And you certainly, Ambassador Michael Oren, you have discovered the joy of writing, and I'm so happy that you've shared it with my listeners today.
I've been delighted. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Such a pleasure.
It's been a joy to talk to you. Bye-bye now. Bye. All right, everybody. This, you know, as I said, when Michael Oren was on before, his short stories are absolutely marvelous. And I want to go straight. I think I have my next guest is on. Is he? No, not yet? Okay, well, we'll go to a commercial, and then we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper someone who is, well, he is a legend in his time, and I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper Ed Hagem, and it is so thrilling always when I get to talk to him because I love his book, and I love him because he has, well, let's just say, he has a special way to think about the world and the universe and about how to make life a little bit better for all of us. And his book is called On the Road, Less Traveled, An Unlikely Journey from the Orphanage to the Boardroom and to Becoming a Legend. Hi, Ed.
Hey, Patsy, you're going to make me a legend. Then I'm going to be in trouble.
Oh,
I don't want to be a legend.
Oh, you are you know, you are so amazing. And I know that you have the special message that you want to give to people. And the most important thing, of course, is that you can't give up. And so many people in this terrible and stressful time is they are giving up.
No, Patsy, you're absolutely right. I mean, my contention is obviously from my lifetime proves that anything is possible. But one of the things that I've proven out to is never be a victim. If things have gone wrong for you, the most important thing is use your energy to decide what's next. Because using energy as a victim really uses up good, solid energy in a direction that's not worthwhile. In other words, trying to use your energy externally to sort of take on something that's caused you a problem. Rather use that energy to figure out what's next. And that's hard enough as it is.
Well, that's true. You know, and the thing is, with this current situation, so many people are feeling that they are the victims of life. You know, that just yeah. They've been sort of slapped in the face, and their heads are spinning. And this is, I'm finding this for, you know, we've all gone through crisis, financial crisis. You know, we went through the pandemic, we went through this, but this recent sort of the inflation and all of the terrible news going on is almost overwhelming. And that's why I think I'm so happy that you're here today, because your positivity, you are a person who believes in four P's. You have your four P's, and we'll talk about them, your passion and principles and partners and plans. But I think your biggest P is positivity. You believe that anything is possible. And that's the most important.
Yeah, over my lifetime, we've gone through, I was born in the Depression, we went through war, I was in orphanages and foster homes, and I was able to live the American dream. There's more opportunity today than in ever before. Obviously, these are not simple times. I wouldn't convince anybody these are simple times, but there's still more opportunity. Things like AI, things like digitization, things like robotics. By the way, people are going to have to solve these major diseases we have. We're working on the pandemic now. We're working on Alzheimer's. There's so much going on in the world today. My communication to young people is just find your passion. Find what you want to do. Find how it fits in with today's world and go out and do it. Because I think that's so important that today, if you can marry your passion to what's happening in the world today, some major trend, and there are so many major trends, so many changes going on that young people can attach themselves, and as well as other people who are changing their jobs and changing their relationships and so on. But I think it's a terrific opportunity, and I am positive. You know, as I used to say, and I spent years as a strategist on Wall Street, when these times came and people were down, I would say the world doesn't come to an end very often. And that's true, you know.
We hope. You know, when we talk about the situation, well, of course, I want to mention to most of my listeners, I already know much about you because I talk about you often, but you went through a really rough childhood of living in orphanages. Your father, well, I guess we'd say called it kidnapped you. And then you landed up in orphanages for much of your childhood. But you, at a very young age, you said you're not going to be a victim, and you were going to go to a proper college and get a great education. And you did it.
I did. I was very lucky. The system is there. And by the way, when I got out of high school, there weren't many scholarships. And the scholarship that I got was given to 1,200 people in the country. So, you know, it's very lucky to get that scholarship. Today, there are abundance of scholarships and opportunities. In fact, I myself have about, 20 or 30 young people that are under my scholarship name. I just spent a day at Northeastern College where there are 20 Hagem scholars there. And they're raring to go. And they're young people that are very enthusiastic about what's going on. But these aren't simple times. But the world, as I say, doesn't come to an end very often. This actually, periods like this provide an enormous opportunity the things that have to be solved. I mean, people solving the problems of today are going to be the heroes of tomorrow. And, you know, I did have a difficult time. In fact, when I was 28 years old and I graduated from graduate school, I had a negative net worth. I owed the world about $8,000 or $10,000, and I actually had to contact the company who gave me my first offer after business school, give me some money so I could get across the country. I was in Boston and they were in Los Angeles. So, you know, and then from there, I've been very lucky. It's been a very good period of American history, I have to admit that. The last 40 years have been fabulous, but I still believe there are so many things that have to be done and that can be done with people today. And we're still the greatest country in the history of the world, and we still offer the most opportunity to those who are willing to take it. And people are only limited by the scope of their imagination, how hard they want to work. This is one of these difficult times, but these times do provide great opportunities, as we saw in the 2009, when things looked like they were coming to an end. That was a great time to be involved in the world. And you know, for the last 10 or so years, things have been pretty good. Now we've gotten ourselves in some unique difficulties. There's no two ways about it, but all difficulties in history were unique at the time.
Well, of course, when you talk about negativity, certainly so many young people today, because of this student loan situation, they are in the hole. And this has affected also their ability then to buy homes. So it is they're facing many, many years of trouble here.
That's very, very true. But I think that even then, there are certain people that have borrowed too much money. But the average loan out today to a college student is somewhere around $25,000 to $30,000. So that can be worked off over a reasonable period of time. There are some people who have overborrowed, you know, getting up to $80,000 to $100,000 type numbers, which are going to be very difficult. But the average student that comes out of college today that has a loan, and not every student has a loan, is somewhere between $25,000 and $30,000. And that's onerous. There's no two ways about that. But it can be paid off, you know, and it can be done. And, you know, I think that you look at starting salaries today, the young people are much higher than they were before. So these things can be taken care of. The ones that are in difficulty, the ones that have overborrowed, that is another whole subject, and that is more difficult. And they'll just have to work their way out over time. But the average student is in reasonably good shape. And there's also scholarships, too, for people toward the end of their college term, that somehow they can get these things paid off. We have a program at the school, one of the schools I'm involved with, where if a person goes into nonprofit, I actually set this up, goes into a nonprofit, will pay off his loan over 3 years. So you know, there are programs around, and people with big loans have to dig those programs out and participate in them.
And I do like the fact that young people that are adapting to sort of the strangeness of finances, because many of them did not understand finance until they had to start.
They had to.
You know, as long as they didn't have to.
Necessity is the mother of invention, right?
Exactly. People who didn't think about it suddenly realized, well, yeah, if I spend this much and I don't have that much, I got to organize this my whole life. And now with some of the apps that they have on the phone that people can see where their money goes, because oftentimes I knew this from the past when, now I was a businesswoman, I had my own company, I had eight franchises, and I would always be amazed at how my employees would not understand where their money was going or what they were spending it on. And when I would say, well, yes, they'd always be short of money, I'd say, well, yes, but you spend $5 for this and $5 for that, and what is $5 times 52? And it's only that. I mean,
so
really.
True.
How much you were spending on something ridiculous every week that they didn't really, really need because they never could multiply.
No, that's so true. And this is teaching people financial security. What do you have to, you know, money in, money out. You have to earn a certain amount of money. You can borrow a certain amount of money, but you got to pay it back. So this is teaching people about finances as well. And we've been very, very, very privileged in not having inflation for the last, you know, 30 years. We all of a sudden have inflation again. But there's been inflation in the past. The 70s was a particularly difficult period with inflation. But we got through that. And actually, there were some huge opportunities there as well.
I miss that. And I was in the 70s. I was in Europe, and it wasn't the same as it was here in America, where inflation really, really hit people.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, I had a 13.5% mortgage on my condominium at the time, but I was renting it out, and so it was actually, the mortgage was very high, but also the rentals were high at that time, so actually the rentals paid off my mortgage. I had a little condominium down in Florida way back there in the 70s. So there's opportunity. They just have to keep digging at it. I have a son now that's in the real estate market, and he's now looking around for, distress stuff that people have to sell, and he's going to basically go back into the market. So you're going to have a huge play in real estate once prices start to come down again. And there's just all kinds of different things that you do. Also, there's needs. I mean, all the people, essentially what I'm talking about, there's a huge social requirement. If you're interested in helping people today, just like you do, Patsy, go out there and find a job in social service where you can tell people, look, and help them through the difficulties in finance and other things like that. But so these are opportunities, and that market is growing. People are, finding difficulty. And if you can help those people, and there are many, many, many associations that will hire you to help people, and if you're trained to do that, you can do very well.
And there is, this is one of the things that I find in, working with writers, so many, for writers right now, it is very, very difficult, I will say.
Oh, very difficult.
For the middle-level writers who were, selling 1,000 books or 4,000 books a month or something like that, that really made a difference in their lives. And now with inflation, mm-hmm. a lot of people aren't buying books as much, and this is a real problem for writers. And so that's one of the things I am doing more and more, trying to encourage people to read more and to understand that the investing in books and reading is probably one of the cheapest things you can do, because instead of buy a book and go sit under the tree and read, and you'll find your life much happier than sort of running around and getting all nervous about everything else that's happening in the world.
Well, there's so many. I just signed a contract for my second book. It's going to come out next April. It's going to be an expansion of the 4P concept. 4P's concept. I'm going to try to. Interesting. It's called The Island of the 4Ps. A modern fable. So I may put it into a fable about preparing for your future. And it's at the printer now, and it's going to come out in March or April next year. But the writing business is a very difficult business, and it's not a very profitable business for the writer, for the publisher, for the publisher. And a particular person like me, it's very difficult to make money in books. You have to sell a lot of them.
And that's true. And of course, at least for you, you have this opportunity because of your business and your relationship with people,
yeah.
that you have a wide reach. But for many people, it is very difficult. And that's why I want to be very encouraging to them that continue writing, continue getting out there, and part of course is what you have. You have connections, you have people who know you, and you have a built-in platform, which is wonderful. But we do want to get your book out to the sort of the general public of young people. I want young people to read this book, and I think as we're approaching the holidays, people really, you will be amazed if you give this book to a young person and they read about what Ed went through in his life, and how he had to struggle, and how he had to work his way. He worked his way to the top and did it with class and style and ethics and just with good cheer, as you can hear it from his voice. This book is a wonderful book for young people.
Patsy, I've been asked a lot, because people like me, during what happens during the holidays are coming up. And I said there are four things I did when I was in college, because I had no place to go. My father was a merchant marine, he was at sea, so I had no place to go. I said there are four or five things you can do to make, this is again imagination. First of all, if you've got a roommate, make sure he or she takes you home, at least for part of the holidays, which is not terrific, because when you get home, you look at their home, want their nice home, and you don't have one. It's a little bit of a downer, but it helps out. The second thing I found someone like me in my arena, and I said, let's go have an adventure. Take a train to Memphis, or go to Canada, or do something with that person. And you know, they're unique. During that period, there's a real bonding opportunity, because you and this other person have the same kind of problem, and you'll take on an adventure. So when the other kids come back, young people come back, and they say, oh, I had a wonderful holiday with my family, at least you had an adventure. But the third thing I did during my college days, and I did quite a bit of it, is I worked during the holidays. And there is a great satisfaction, and there's lots of work to be done during the holidays. I worked at the post office. I used to work 12-hour shifts. And when you finish a 12-hour shift, there are a lot of people there that are just like you. And you go out and you have a beer or you have a Coke and you talk to people and you really develop some friendships. One of the fun things I did, it doesn't sound like fun, was to wait tables at a party on New Year's Eve. Well, you know, that sounds very downer. Everybody's having a good time and you're a waiter or a busboy. But after that's over, there's a lot of booze around. There are a lot of waitresses and waiters to go out and have a good time. And you can do that. And then finally, the fourth thing I did when I was in college is I volunteered. Now, when you volunteer at holiday time, even though you have a difficult time, you meet people who have worse situations than yours. And so you recognize that in some respects, you may not be the luckiest person in the world, but you're luckier than some people. Those are the four or five things that I've been pitching for holidays. Is just got to get off your tail and go and do it. And finding work during holidays is, I find that, I look back at my work experience, I had three or four different jobs during the holidays. It was really a good deal. And I also earned money, which was a pretty good deal.
That's right. And so you can pay off all your debts.
That's right.
Exactly. So I am so happy that you're writing another book. And the four P's, do you want to name them quickly?
Well, find your passions. Find what you really love to do. If you love your work, you'll never work. Find things that excite you and recognize they will change over time. I haven't got really the time to go through this, but, you know, they start to form in high school, and mine were, you know, math and science, baseball, basketball, and girls. And over time, that changed to engineering, to, you know, to extracurricular activities, and finally to, you know, involvement. And the second thing is find your principles. Find those rules that you want to follow for the rest of your life. Start as early as possible. And basically, find those lines you won't cross. And when I was very lucky, I went to a Catholic school, and nuns made it very clear where the lines were and what I shouldn't cross. And if I did the right thing, I ended up at the good place. And if I did the wrong things, I ended up in the other place. Then find your partners. You need partners today in today's world. Find someone to love. Find someone you can share your life with. Find people who can help you in what you're trying to do by doing things you can't do, or doing things better than you can do them. And in my case, I found people that do things that I did well, but I didn't want to do those things. So I ended up doing things that I did well that I wanted to do. And finally, take all those things and put them into a written plan. You know, and then when you start writing down where you want to go and how you might want to get there, think about what's going to happen in your lifetime, what's happening in your lifetime, where you can ride a wave or a cycle or a theme, something where there's an unsatisfied need or a definite demand for what's going to happen. And there are lots of those things out there. So you combine all those things. I was at college the other day, and he said, Ed, you got too many ideas. Give me one idea. I said, sit down and write down where you want to go, physically write it down, and how you think you might get there. So those are the four P's. The book has been being printed now. I'm going to have it out next March and have some fun with it. Going to send it out to high school counselors and so forth, so I can help young people just get excited about it. A woman wrote me the other day and said her daughter had read my book and she was not sure what she wanted to do, and she's now applied to college and she's off to college, and she just went to college in September. So I'm getting paid back pretty big for my book, and I really am thankful for that as well. And I'm going to keep talking about it because I want everybody to recognize that anything is possible. Education is the solution to almost everything. And for God's sakes, if you can help it, never be a victim.
Exactly. Oh, I'm so very, very proud that you are on Joy on Paper today. And in time for the holidays, people, get this book. It's called On the Road Less Traveled, An Unlikely Journey from the Orphanage to the Boardroom. It's a fascinating book. Ed is inspiring. And I know that if you give this book, you are giving a child, a young person, an opportunity to start thinking about how to make a wonderful life for themselves. And Ed has done it because one of the things that he is famous for is having principles. And in his business, and as they read about what he went through in business and what he overcame, Ed, you are inspiring to everybody. And I just want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
And Patsy, thank you. You actually helped me because you inspire me. And thank you very much. You have a wonderful holiday. Thanks for having me on again. We'll do it again sometime on the second
We'll do it in the spring. Right? I look forward to it. Thank you again, Ed. Ed Hagem, you are a fantastic person. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now. Wow. You know, I really... When we're thinking here about young people, and young people who are now, you know, with all the problems going on in the world and all the worries that they're facing, you might sort of say, well, what should I do? Should I give them this book? And I'm telling you, this book can change a person. It really can, because he went through, you know, when you go as a child through a half dozen or more than a half dozen orphanages, and he had to struggle. But Ed, listen to this positivity in his voice. He is so marvelous, and he has overcome so much, and he does it with joy. And that's what I love about this book. It's called On the Road Less Traveled, and it is really a story of joy, of his life, of all that he's done, of his love for his wife, Barbara. It's a story of love, a story of giving, because now all since he retired, well, I don't think he ever retires, because he's always working, he's always doing something, he is always giving back to people, giving back to the community, giving back. He has these wonderful relationship with school, and he is always giving. And that's what you want to help young people to learn, that life can be so marvelous if you just learn to take care of yourself and give to others. And Ed Hagem has done that. And I love this book. I really do. So please, you know, you don't need a lot more electronic stuff. You don't need a lot more all the stuff that you've seen advertised on television. Most of it's going to go to waste. But a book with the right words in it that can spark a young person's mind and get them on the right road is what you need to give. Anyway, it's been a busy day with two wonderful, wonderful authors. And I just want to thank again all the NaNoWriMo people. I know you have one day left, and you're going to make it. Work hard today. Finish that book and be a winner. Anyway, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry and her wonderful new book. Book 2 in her Haunted Haven series is called High Spirits, and it's a Christmas-themed book. Get it? And then say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed, for everything. And he saluted me, and I saluted him, because I should have been a general. I would have been a great general. Oh, I would have been so good. I can't believe how good I would have been. Anyway, everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful day. Bye-bye now. We'll be right back.